Next case is 09-10104, Pennsylvania General Insurance Company versus Park Ohio Industries, Inc. Sullivan.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, my name is Kathleen Sullivan, and I'll argue on behalf of the appellants, Continental and Nationwide. This case arises as a contribution action among insurers as a consequence of this Court's 2002 decision in Goodyear versus Aetna. In this case, the 8th District Court of Appeals held that after the insurance policyholder, Park Ohio, came to a targeted insurer, Penn General, and obtained all sums from that targeted insurer, that Penn General was then free to seek contribution from the other non-targeted insurers, Nationwide and Continental, even though Park Ohio had never given Continental or Nationwide any notice of the existence of the claim or the suit, even though Park Ohio had never given Continental or Nationwide any opportunity to participate in the suit, and even though Park Ohio had never given Continental and Nationwide even any knowledge of the existence of a settlement that had been made 2 years before. In other words, it was 2 years from Park Ohio's settlement with the underlying asbestos claimant, 2 years, over 2 years, between that time and the time that Nationwide and Continental first found out about the existence of the suit. The 8th District Court of Appeals nonetheless held that contribution could obtain against Continental and Nationwide, despite the abrogation of their contractual protections. We think that that decision must be reversed because the 8th District has, through that ruling, abrogated contract rights between Continental and Nationwide on the one hand and Park Ohio on the other, in violation of the Ohio and the federal Constitution.
Counsel, the 8th District went through a pretty careful analysis as to why they arrived at the decision. They indicated that those contract rights are between the insured and the insurer, and that they should not, that this is an equitable action, and those contract rights should not bind the insurance company that paid up and settled this case in the first place.
Justice Piper, you're correct that the 8th District relied on Goodyear to, in effect, say the contracts between Park
right.
Ohio and
so,
Continental and
so you would have three or four insurance companies sitting at the table and battling over how much is to be paid in the underlying claim. When Park is trying to get out of this without, as I read it, their analysis was they could be liable for $3 or $4 million on this claim, and they believed, and their attorneys who were skilled at this felt $1 million to get out of this was a very good deal for the insured.
Justice Pfeiffer, that is what the 8th District said, but equity can't override contract any more than a statute could override contract. The 8th District said that Penn General was free to impose its litigation.
Penn General has no privity with these contracts.
That's correct, Your Honor. We're not arguing that Penn General breached. What we're arguing is that the 8th District's rule of law, which is that Penn General can get contribution from companies whose contractual rights were breached, abrogates contract, just as a statute would. If a statute
you want us to overturn Goodyear.
We do, Your Honor. We think that's the better rule, but there's an alternative way, and if I could take them in order. We think you can easily overrule the 8th District by saying our contractual rights were abrogated. We had rights to notice, participation, and consent to settlement. They're plainly in the record. They're undisputed. We had contractual rights. They were abrogated. And let me quote to you from what the 8th District said. The 8th District said in the appendix at page 20, Park, Ohio had no duty to notify Nationwide and Continental of the DiStefano claim. And on Appendix 22, the 8th District said Nationwide and CNA, as non-targeted insurers, had no right to participate in the litigation and defense of the DiStefano matter. Couldn't be plainer that those contractual rights to notice and contract were nullified by the 8th District, even though it was in an equity suit. And there's no question also that on the factual record here, we were prejudiced. The trial court found that Continental and Nationwide were prejudiced here. If you look in the appendix at page 35, the trial court, the finder of fact, said there was plainly effective prejudice here because Continental and Nationwide had a suit settled out from under them 2 years before they even knew it existed. And then again on appendix page 39, the trial court recalls this court's decision in Ormet and says that here, as in Ormet, the gravest prejudice is one where a suit is settled out from under an insurer that had no opportunity to consent to settlement.
Do your clients dispute that the plaintiff here got this dreaded disease?
Your Honor, there's no dispute as to the existence of an underlying bodily injury. There's no dispute as to continuous trigger. There's no dispute here that because we can't tell when the asbestos injury manifested, when the exposure occurred, everyone in this case agrees, and both courts agree, this is a continuous trigger case. We think the better policy is to overrule Goodyear and to say that pro rata allocation according to time on the risk is the way that all cases of this nature should be resolved. All I mean to point out is that...
Is that sort of like the market share concept?
It's not quite like a market share concept,
Your
Honor.
It sounds very much like it.
Well, it's time on the risk. Time on the risk says, let's to make it simple here, if there were 10 years of policies, 10 years of exposure, and 10 years of policies, one policy per year, if I gave a policy for 3 years, I'll pay 30% of the claim. If another company gave a policy that covered 1 year, it will pay 10% of the claim. And if the third company had the remaining 60% of the claim, it'll pay 60% of the loss.
How does the Court of Appeals decision prohibit you from achieving that result?
It does in several ways, Your Honor. We think you can overturn the Court of Appeals decision simply.
But didn't they say, well, you're all in the boat, and there will be an equitable contribution. So when they can buy your argument as to what's the equitable contribution, the time factor that you lay out would appear to be a reasonable way to do that.
Justice Pfeiffer, it would not be equitable because it is not equitable for Penn General to be able to force Continental and Nationwide to contribute when their contractual rights were violated. That's not equitable. And where Penn General sat on its rights. Remember the other piece of this.
Okay, but you took us over to arguing, well, what we're all responsible for is time on the clock. I believe that was
your
phrase.
That's right, Your Honor. We think that's the better
rule. Isn't
that
exactly what's going to happen when this case gets back to the trial court? Is it will be assigned responsibility, time on the clock, to each insurer. So you would be getting exactly what you advocate.
No, Your Honor. We think that time on the clock can only be applied to the non-targeted insurers if their contract rights were observed. If the policyholder,
well,
Park,
why
Ohio,
would
had brought us all in.
Why would we be talking about time on the clock? You think your argument is you shouldn't be there at all.
Justice Pfeiffer, we shouldn't be here at all.
Right.
Because in this case, our contract rights were abrogated. You in Goodyear said, let me give you two ways to reverse here. There are two different ways to reverse. We respectfully suggest the second way is the better way, but let me start with the first way. You should reverse the 8th District here and reinstate the trial court's judgment. The trial court's the fact finder. Said your contract rights were violated, you were prejudiced, you're out of the case. You should reinstate that, and you could do so simply by holding as the rule of law that Goodyear contribution rights by the targeted insurer against the non-targeted insurers apply only when the non-targeted insurer's policies were complied with. Now, I think, Your Honor, the 8th District misconstrued this court's decision in Goodyear. The 8th District said Goodyear made us do this. But Goodyear, if there's anything fundamental to this court's decision in Goodyear, it's that the terms of policies should be applied faithfully, that insurance contracts are no less contracts than any other contract. And Goodyear also crucially said in the key paragraph, Goodyear said that in a contribution action, In such an instance, the insurers bear the burden of obtaining contribution from other applicable primary insurance policies. The 8th District read that term applicable out of your decision in Goodyear. It misconstrued Goodyear. Our first contention is you must reverse because a policy from Continental and Nationwide cannot be applicable if our notice, participation, and consent rights were completely ignored.
Now, the appellee argues, though, that under the Ferrando case, that the mere passage of time does not prejudice an insurer, and so that, and because this case was apparently settled fairly reasonably, was apparently well handled, even though your contracts were breached, you really suffer no prejudice in this case. Could you respond to that?
Yes, Justice Kupp. Ferrando makes clear that prejudice is presumed for violation of the notice and consent to settle provisions unless there's contrary evidence. The finder of fact here on a stipulated record found prejudice, Appendix 35, Appendix 39. The 8th District had no province to undo that finding of fact as to prejudice. This is not a case in which there was a dispute over a summary judgment. So we think prejudice is established in the record, Your Honor. We don't think that Penn General has a right to substitute for us in deciding whether this was a reasonable settlement. But, Your Honor, if you reverse the 8th District on the ground I've just suggested, read Goodyear to say applicable, an applicable policy must be one whose contractual provisions were complied with, we would win. But that wouldn't settle the problems that arose. And to come back to your question, Justice Pfeiffer, the difference if we go back to a time-on-the-clock solution in the contribution action, that's not going to solve the problems that Goodyear has created. And that's why we respectfully request that this Court overrule Goodyear and adopt pro rata by time on the risk rather than all sums.
Let me take you to that issue, Ms. Sullivan. You read our Gladys opinion, I'm sure.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
All the parties seem to agree that Goodyear should be at least modified, if not overruled. How do we apply Gladys to overruling Goodyear? Do you think it meets all the three or four tests that
we do, Your Honor. Gladys first said, was the decision wrong at the time, or alternatively, have circumstances changed? We submit both of those are met here. It was wrong at the time because, with all respect, it misread the term policy period. If we go back to Goodyear, the Court was very meticulous about giving effect to the term all sums and said Penn General, Park, Ohio, can come get all sums from Penn General. But it's a basic principle of Ohio contract law that an insurance contract must be read in terms of all of its provisions, giving due weight to all its terms. And there's another key provision we think was overlooked incorrectly in Goodyear, and that's the policy period provision. If you go to the supplement at page 222, you see that the insurance we're only obligated to pay for bodily injury to which this insurance applies. If you then turn over to supplement page 223, you say, well, to what does this insurance apply? And you look to the policy period territory provision, and you see, oh, it applies only to injury that occurs during this policy period. And then you turn over to supplement page 224, the definition of occurrence, and that says occurrence is injury that occurs during the policy period. The term policy period is the key term that Goodyear failed to give due weight to in connection with all sums.
So how are we going to litigate all of that? What's the trial look like then? Is the plaintiff in this case, who has an asbestos injury, and it occurs over a period of time at a particular plant, and that's who he's suing, but you've got all these insurance companies in the background fighting over how much is ours, how does that get resolved?
Justice
Pfeiffer, in the trial.
Justice Pfeiffer, the asbestos claimant, Mr. DiStefano, is going to be fine under our approach. He comes to his employer. He says, pay me for my injury. The employer pays him. And then under our approach, we think the employer should do what it should have done in the first place, notify all its insurers. And when it notifies all its insurers, in the typical case, Justice Pfeiffer, the insurers will get together for a common defense rather than
litigation. Whose lawyer is sitting at the table on the defense side?
The insurers will decide whether to let the company litigate or whether to litigate themselves. They'll come up with a common defense agreement.
And so do we decide on, we've got 3 months and you've got 6 months, so we get twice the vote you get when we decide which lawyer sits there?
Your Honor, what we're suggesting is a rule of law that will make it clear without the insurance company squabbling. We think there's less wasteful litigation under pro rata, and let me explain why.
Well, before you get there, can you finish the analysis of why Gladys applies here?
If I may take extra time, Mr. Chief Justice.
You may have extra time.
If you disagree with us that that Goodyear read the term policy period out of the policies, we think it did. We think just as Gladys read you to mean other, Scott Ponser read you to mean other, we think that here Goodyear incorrectly read policy period out of the statute. But, Your Honors, if you don't think that's right, and reasonable minds can differ on it, changed circumstances have occurred since Goodyear, and that is that the experience of all of your sister states but one who have ruled in the meantime, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, Kentucky, Kansas, only Wisconsin has ruled in favor of all sums. We think changed circumstances have shown that, Justice Pfeiffer, your very concerns that there not be wasteful litigation have not been solved by all sums. They're better solved by pro rata. All the other sister states but one, Wisconsin. Kentucky is the sixth one. So Kentucky, Kansas, Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, all have ruled for pro rata. And that changed circumstance, Your Honor, we think satisfies the alternative part of the
first
part of the Galatas test.
Are you saying that there's only six states in the union that have ruled on this or changed their scheme, or these are the most recent six?
These are the most recent. What I'm saying is changed circumstances since Goodyear. If you take a static view, Justice O'Connor, more states have pro rata than all sums. What we're trying to focus on is the change circumstances.
The evolution of the legal thinking in the courts.
And we think that's because the experience of these long-tail risk problems, environmental contamination, toxic exposure since Goodyear, has shown that, Justice Pfeiffer, your very concerns are met better through pro rata allocation than all sums. And let me just explain why, and that, if I could turn to the second part of the Gladys test, defies practical workability. Here's the problems we think the sister states have seen and that you should now acknowledge. The problem is, what did you want to do in Goodyear? You wanted to have judicial economy. Well, we don't have judicial economy because what happens is Park, Ohio goes to Penn General. Penn General says, I don't want to be stuck with the whole claim. I don't want to be stuck with a disproportionate share. So I'm going to balk. And look what happened here. Penn General had to go into, there had to be bad faith litigation to be able to get the information about the other insurers.
Excuse me. When we're talking about defies practical workability, we're talking on a scale comparable to the litigation that was spawned by the Scott Ponser issues, and then the derivative of those cases, which literally clogged the dockets of the common pleas courts and appellate courts throughout the state. Here, are you alleging that that's the volume of practical workability?
Your Honor, in Gladys, this court, in the opinion that you wrote for the court, said it's not just increasing the volume of litigation. It's creating complex litigation that was previously simpler. It's muddying the waters, and it's creating confusion. All those elements we submit do apply here. We think there's three terrible litigation problems that Goodyear created that couldn't have necessarily been foreseen at the time Goodyear decided. Goodyear was trying to achieve judicial economy and workability. But there's three problems. One, the insurer who's targeted may balk and say, I don't want to pay the whole claim. So they fight, and they force this action that Penn General had to bring, that Park, Ohio had to bring against Penn General. Remember, Penn General didn't settle right away, as Justice Pfeiffer, you had hoped it would for all sums. Penn General said, well, we'll pay you a little bit, but you have to come after us. And 3 years of coverage litigation ensued. So the first thing is it spawns needless coverage actions that never would have happened if Penn General knew I'll never be liable for more than a third of the claim because
well,
I was only on 9
that's
out of
a leap of
years.
Faith that nobody can make.
Well, Your
I
Honor,
mean, wait, how can you assume that an insurer who balks at paying $1 million wouldn't balk at paying? I mean, some insurance companies take the position, we aren't paying, period.
Your Honor, we believe that the experience of the sister states using pro rata has shown, and should help show this court, that if you know in advance, my share is limited to my time on the risk. I was on the risk for 2 years, out of 10, I'm liable only for a fifth. In this case, I was liable for a third. If Penn General had known that, it might not have balked. But let me go to the second problem, Your Honor. Let's say that what happens in another case is not what happened here, that the insured comes to the targeted insurer, and the targeted insurer says, I'm going to deny you coverage unless you bring all your insurers into this action. Now let's suppose we have all the other insurers at the table. Well, under all sums, they have every incentive to bring claims and cross-claims against one another and implead each other and create a complex litigation, whereas if they all knew in advance, I'm only going to be liable for my time on the risk, there is no need for those third-party claims. That disappears. And we think the third problem, Your Honor, is even in a case where it happens the way you thought it should in Goodyear, insured comes to the targeted insurer, and then the targeted insurer goes after the other insurers itself, you've spawned two litigations. You haven't solved the allocation problem. You've just postponed it to the contribution litigation. So there's three ways in which we've made litigation more confusing and complex, which was against the intent this Court had in Goodyear. But moving last to the reliance interest, the third piece of the Gelatis test that the Chief Justice asked me to respond to, Gelatis couldn't have been clearer that by reliance, we mean the reliance of the primary actors when they wrote their policies and their contracts. And here all we're asking you to do is to restore the status quo ante Goodyear to the very bargains the parties made. An insurance contract, as this Court has recognized, is a balance of rights and obligations. The parties here, insured, paid a certain premium, paid a premium in response for a set of rights, and had a set of obligations. That's how the insurance contract was written. Eighth District has rewritten the contract. We're saying that pro rata will give the insured exactly what it paid its premium for. It paid for coverage for the policy period. It's going to get coverage on any claim in these long-tail claims for the policy period, provided it meets its contractual obligations. Notice.
Counsel, how would time on the clock work when you have a situation like we've had in Ohio where medical insurers went belly up? Their time on the clock is just tough luck for the plaintiff at that point.
Your Honor, this is an important point about what's wrong with all sums. Pro rata is going to saddle the targeted – sorry, all sums will saddle the targeted insurer, even in a world where notice was complied with unfair obligations, where the insured has been imprudent, where the insured has self-insured or had a period of no insurance or had a period of underinsurance or has insured with a company that's a fly-by-night that goes insolvent. Why should the targeted insurer, and here we don't think Penn General followed its duties, but if any insurer were in the situation of being targeted, why should the targeted insurer pick up the shares of the company who self-insured or didn't insure or insured with an insolvency? We think pro rata solves that by putting that consequence back on the insured. But, Your Honor, I want to be clear. We're making
it puts
this
it back on the injured party, doesn't it?
Not on the injured party, Your Honor. The Park Ohio is going to have to pay Mr. DeStefano for his injuries.
Okay.
All we're arguing about is if Park Ohio didn't get enough insurance, should it be able to transfer that decision to the targeted insurer? We think that's inequitable and unfair, even though we don't think Penn General should win in this case. We think a targeted insurer in a future case shouldn't have
but
that obligation.
But here Park is solid, so, yeah, it doesn't put it on the plaintiff. But in other cases, it might.
No, Your Honor, we think that we would be happy to accept a pro rata rule that would have made us pay for our time period. We picked up 6 years on a risk going 27 years, and we would have been happy had we had notice and an opportunity to participate and prior consent to settlement to pay a pro rata share. We think that all insurance companies, you don't know if you're going to be targeted or if you're going to be the one that comes, where the targeted insurer comes after you in a contribution action, you don't know in advance. If you're behind a veil of ignorance, you would say, what is the fairest rule? The fairest rule is, let's relieve the insured of its burden of proving causation in each policy period. That's the problem with these long-tail risk cases. The insured can't scientifically or administratively meet its usual burden to show it was injured in each policy period. So we're going to relieve them of that burden. That's fair to the insured. But on the other side, we're going to say to the insurers, your ultimate liability is limited to your time on the risk. It was policy period, language in your contract. That should limit your liability.
Counsel,
we think that will reduce litigation.
You make a very nice argument. I come back to my initial query, though, we faced a very similar set of, I mean, the points of logic. You're going around the board and nailing them down. The same argument was made and rejected by this court as to market share in asbestos cases.
Your Honor.
It's the very same theory that you're advancing here.
But, Your Honor, I'd like you to please focus on one important distinction between this case and those cases. Contribution in a tort action is not what is at issue here. This is a case in which we're talking about contribution among parties, all of whom have contracts. And so the usual thinking you might have in a tortfeasor case about contribution really doesn't apply here. What we're trying to do is say, our contracts can best be read in a fair way by saying everybody's liable for his or her time on the risk, but not for more. We think that's going to reduce litigation. It's going to induce peaceful dispute resolution here. The insurers, if you know in advance under your rule of law that you're never going to be liable for more than 30% if you had 3 years on a 10-year exposure case, you're not going to have any incentive to balk. You're not going to have any...
Yeah, as far as the trial, though, the duty to defend, the targeted insurer would be the one who is defending for the insured?
We don't think so, Your Honor. We think that if this case had been done right under a pro rata regime, there wouldn't have been a targeted insurer.
Then you'd have everybody involved.
Everybody's at the table.
But that's the problem, and I think that's what Goodyear was suggesting, that the insured immediately gets the benefit of the contract, and then it's up to the insurance companies to determine their share afterwards. That's how I read Goodyear.
Your Honor, that's exactly what Goodyear said, and what we're trying to present to you is that the good intentions of Goodyear, to have judicial economy, to have the policy read according to its terms, and to have fairness for the insured and the insurers, have not worked out that way. And the reason is, if you just go after one insurer, if the policyholder just picks one insurer, that insurer does not know who the other insurers are. Remember what happens here. Park Ohio doesn't bother to look in the file cabinet, or if it did look in the file cabinet, it doesn't bother to tell Penn General that Nationwide and Continental issued policies for other years. Why should it? Goodyear gives it an incentive to pick out Penn General, and then it's done. But it's not Penn General that's in the best position to know who the other insurers are. We think pro rata, by forcing the insured party to disclose to all of its insurers, it's in the best position to go to the file cabinet and find those policies. It has a contractual obligation to give notice to all its insurers. We think pro rata will have the salutary effect.
Counsel, if we don't overrule Goodyear, what's your second best outcome here that you're advocating? You said you had two.
We do, Your Honor. We think that the better approach is to overrule Goodyear for all the reasons Galatis authorizes. In the alternative, however, we think you should construe Goodyear. You should correct a misconstruction of Goodyear. You should construe Goodyear to allow contribution by non-targeted insurers to the targeted insurer only where the underlying insurance contract was complied with. So in other words, for Penn General to recover against Continental and Nationwide, Continental and Nationwide would have had to have had their notice, participation, and consent to settle rights.
And how would that rule work? Would it be that the targeted insurance company, we would write a rule that says the targeted insurance company, if you want contribution, you need to give notice to the insured that they must do the search of the files and cough up every possible insurer that they think might be in and tell the targeted insurer about that at the front.
And it
would seem to me ordinarily that would be what would happen anyway.
This case
may be factually an aberration.
Justice Pfeiffer, we agree that's what should happen, and it is what should have happened here, but it will happen as a matter of course if you adopt pro rata. It won't happen as a matter of course if you keep all sums. Here, what should have happened is, after all, Penn General did have a right to cooperation. It's part of its policy on page 219 of the supplement, that it had a right to cooperation in the protection of its contribution and subrogation rights. Park Ohio flagrantly failed to cooperate. But what did Park Ohio do here? It said, Goodyear gives me a right to fail to cooperate. There's a letter that Park Ohio sends to Penn General, and it says, you're in flagrant violation of Ohio law in trying to get us to cooperate with you. Goodyear says we don't have to cooperate. It's in the supplement at page 122. Under Goodyear, said Park Ohio, Park Ohio has an absolute right to designate the policies for payment, and you can't make us cooperate. You're violating Ohio law. We think, Justice Pfeiffer, that's the problem with Goodyear. It makes the insured company think that it can sit on its file cabinets, not tell you who the other insurers are, threaten you with a bad faith action.
Well, we can fix that, though, without abandoning the fundamental tenet of Goodyear, and that is the...
Your Honor, we've thought a great deal about this, and we came to you and we said there's a narrow way to fix the 8th District Court of Appeals error here. They read the term applicable out of your Goodyear decision. If you pop it back in and you say Goodyear never blessed a contribution action against insurers who had had a case settled out from under them 2 years before, that is the essence of prejudice. That was never our intent in Goodyear, to allow contribution actions against insurers who are innocent parties who had no knowledge of the underlying litigation or the settlement. You could correct it by saying applicable didn't mean that. Applicable means the non-targeted insurers are liable for contribution only if their underlying policy terms were complied with. But that's going to be a little bit like the old saying, you can't leap a chasm in two leaps. If you want to get to what you were trying to do in Goodyear, which is balance the fairness to the insured against the fairness to the insurers, you're going to leave a mountain of unfairness left with that solution. The unfairness that's going to be left is that the Penn Generals of the world, even if they do what they should have done, which they didn't do here, even if they try to find out about who the other insurers are, suppose in a future case there are years where there was no insurance or self-insurance or underinsurance. Thank you, Your Honor. So with respect, we think you must reverse the 8th District. There are two ways to do it. We respectfully think the better way is to overrule Goodyear. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Sullivan. Mr. Garner.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Richard Garner. I represent the appellee, Pennsylvania General Insurance Company, Penn General. There are two issues before this Court, and one of them is this contribution action, where we're seeking about $250,000 from CNA and just shy of $373,000 from Nationwide. The issue that seems to have attracted a lot of the attention of the amici that have entered this case is whether or not this Court should revisit its ruling in Goodyear. I'd like to address that as well. I don't know exactly, I didn't time how much time Pellant had. I just hope we have a chance to...
You'll be given some extra time. As long as there are questions flowing, you can answer any question from a justice.
And the reason why I ask that, Mr. Chief Justice, is because I think we had some reasons addressed in our brief that are slightly different than what were raised here by Appellant in terms of what some of the problems were with Goodyear. I do want to state at the outset, I represent an insurance company. It should be no surprise that Penn General agrees with those who are seeking to revisit the Goodyear case. However, I believe, Justice O'Connor, you asked, well, you have two theories that allow you to win this case. Regardless of what this Court decides with respect to Goodyear, the outcome on the contribution claim should be exactly the same. Because under the circumstances that were created in this case, under the circumstances under which Pennsylvania General decided to pay the $1 million in this case, it is equitably entitled to contribution from Penn General, CNA, and from Nationwide in this case.
I understand what you're saying is you operated under Goodyear. You were targeted. You had to pay all sums, and then you had to go after everybody else. And as I understand from the briefs and from what they're saying is, Penn would not cooperate with you and give you information about the other insurers. Am I summarizing that correct?
I think that's correct, Justice Stratton. It's one of those times when I think I'm supposed to walk up to the microphone kind of sheepishly and say, well, you guys made us do this.
Okay. Well, and I agree. That's fair. So if we made you do that, as looking at the rule itself, which I have to confess I was on Goodyear, when I read the briefs, I went back to see if I was on Goodyear because I couldn't quite believe I signed off on Goodyear, and I did, and I can see some issues that have certainly come up. But I think what you're saying is you play by the rules Goodyear set, so even if we were to overrule Goodyear and go back to pro rata, you should not lose because you were on the hook because of Goodyear. Is that what you're essentially saying?
I think that's correct, but there's more than that because – we're talking about contribution as an equitable cause of action. We do have to pay attention to the circumstances. That's what equity is about. It's not the same as a legal contract cause of action. And I want to take the Court through that briefly, and then we can turn to the issue of Goodyear and some of the problems that we saw with Goodyear that are going to be different than what have been addressed by Ms. Sullivan. Now, in this case, I think it's important to understand that everybody agrees the Penn General was entitled to contribution from insurers that have applicable policies. There's no question there. The argument seems to be about whether or not CNA and Nationwide's policies are applicable. And, Justice Cupp, you asked the question about Ferrando, and that's where we're going to be going with this. There isn't any doubt, or there should be little doubt, that when Mr. DiStefano filed his claim in March of 2002, Park, Ohio could have picked Penn General, could have picked CNA, could have picked Nationwide, could have picked Travelers that settled out of this case with us. It could have picked any one of those insurers. And for whatever reason, it chose Penn General. Now, all the policies were triggered. All the policies are substantially the same. Mr. DiStefano's mesothelioma claims fall within the insuring agreements. There are no substantive exclusions, and we all have the same type of notice and cooperation-related provisions in our policies. We also have, as I'll come back to it being important later on, the same pro rata other insurance clauses in our policies, which we'll see have some importance in this case. And so the dispute is, are these policies were applicable then, because they could have picked them. But they're not applicable today. Why not? Are they applicable today? And we got to look at that. There are also some other questions which are raised about whether or not Penn General's actions in this case create some kind of equitable bar to the contribution action. And I will address these orders and these contentions in order and indicate to you that there are neither contractual bars nor equitable bars to the contribution claim we brought in this case. Now, it's important to understand at this point in time the extreme nature of what CNA and Nationwide are arguing in light of what the case law is in this state in terms of Ferrando. They are saying that their policies are not applicable for one reason, and that is because they didn't learn of DiStefano's claims until after they'd been settled. It's the only reason. And they argue alternatively that this violated, well, notice, defense, cooperation, voluntary payment, all these other provisions, all of which were in Penn General's policies. So all the insurers have the same provisions in their policies.
So basically, if we had had a pro rata, they would have all been in the case. They would not have had any of those defenses to assert because they would have gotten notice and they would have had cooperation and all of that, and they would have all been liable for pro rata.
You know, I'm not sure that that's going to work out exactly that way in this kind of a case. I'm not exactly sure whether or not Park, Ohio was being obstinate and obstructionist, or it just couldn't find policies that were 40 years old. Obviously, when you get into the litigation context, people begin sending letters back and forth on those things. It's conceivable to me, Justice Stratton, that we would have been the only targeted insurer, and we just don't know about these folks for a while.
What I'm saying is if we had had a pro rata, they would have all been at the table, and they would have not been able to assert the defenses they're asserting today of lack of cooperation, notice, et cetera.
I understand the question.
And so,
go ahead.
Because the law was Goodyear, and Goodyear, as Park National interpreted, didn't require them to notify anybody else but you, they're now here saying our policies, our rights were abrogated, and we shouldn't be on the hook. But then the equities seem to come back against your client, who, under Goodyear, was stuck for the whole amount. So it seems like maybe even if we undo Goodyear, it has to be a prospective application and not a retroactive application to this case?
Whether it would be retrospective or prospective is an interesting topic. Ordinarily, it would be retrospective. You'd have to make a finding specifically why it would be prospective, as you did in the DiCenzo case recently. In this case, though, what I wanted to go back to was this. I'm not sure that we wouldn't be in the same situation we're in if Goodyear wasn't the law. We might be with all sums, but let me back up and say that. Even in a pro rata situation, we have to know that there's other insurance out there. And the record in this case seems to indicate that Park, Ohio knew about this stuff but was hiding it. And, of course, that's the best position for my client, best position for them to argue that as well, too. But let's assume that we have a situation where it's 40, 50 years ago that the exposure took place, and they just can't find the policies. It's conceivable to me that you could have a targeted insurer. We found this policy, and we're going to let them know. And then if we can find the other folks, we'll let them know. I mean, I think we have to be fair about that, that it is at least possible that we could be in a situation where Penn General could be asked to pay the full amount, and then we'd have to go back and do what we're doing now, which is contribution. And we may be back in this same situation. So this brings us to the first fundamental point of the contribution action, which is what Justice Pfeiffer brought up. I'm not in privity of contract with CNA. I'm not in privity of contract with Nationwide. Park, Ohio is. And Goodyear says they don't have to seek coverage from them, and they never did. They never made a claim with CNA, and they never made a claim with Nationwide. So if we know that their policies were applicable at one point because it fell within their insuring agreements, there were no exclusions, Park Ohio had paid all the premiums and done everything, the question is, what relevance is that when we start talking about the fact that you can select one insurer under Goodyear, which they did, and they don't have to make a claim against Nationwide or CNA? Well, it leads us to a conundrum.
In all honesty, in reading Goodyear and someone who didn't participate in the case, it sort of left the contribution issue hanging as to what you need in for contribution. I mean, you can read it several different ways. One, you could read it, whatever the normal contribution rules apply, or you could read it as, overriding the policies with the equitable contribution. So that issue seems to me to be a little unresolved even in Goodyear.
And I think it does create a problem. No matter how we proceed here, Justice Pfeiffer, there's going to be some problems. There's going to be litigation. You got a lot of folks. But this isn't any different than what we have in other cases where there's multiple insurers, construction, in cases where we have maybe primary insurers, excess insurers, and so forth. The insurers have to get together. They have to make a decision about what they're going to do. And then typically what would happen when we ask these questions about how would the defense go in this case? The insurers would get together. They would decide on one defense lawyer who would defend Park Ohio. They would be paid by some kind of agreement between the insurers. It could be a provisional agreement that would be changed later once the coverage issues were litigated, or it could be something that would be ironclad, depending upon how much information everybody had. And Park Ohio would be defended by one lawyer or by one group of lawyers that was agreed upon. There shouldn't be fighting. That's to everybody's detriment, as far as I'm concerned, from the defense side, to have us fighting over, no, it's going to be my lawyer, no, it's my lawyer. That could happen.
But Mr. Garner, you began by saying that you agreed that there should be some modification to Goodyear. What is the modification that you think should be made? And now you seem to be arguing that the position taken by Ms. Sullivan is going to create a whole new series of issues. So is there some agreement between yourself and Pennsylvania General as to what Goodyear should be modified to, or do you have one view different from the view Ms. Sullivan presented?
We agree with everything that she had to say with respect to the pro rata allocation and the adoption of that over the all sums. And there are lots of problems that are there. However, there is a glaring omission in Goodyear that was not addressed, that needs to be addressed, which means this court is going to have to go back and substantively address Goodyear. And that is the fact that this court did not address the application of other insurance clauses to these types of cases. This omission requires this court to go back and look at that issue. And let me tell you the reason why. This court didn't create the all-sums approach. What it did was it borrowed from primarily from Keene versus INA, the 1981 D.C. Circuit case. And it's important to look at what Keene said about why we adopt this type of approach. It's not just by judicial fiat, we're going to say this is the way it works. They're looking at these progressive injury claims, and they're saying exactly what Ms. Sullivan said. It's difficult to determine exactly when the damages took place. So, as a matter of a legal fiction, we're going to treat them as a single indivisible injury. Well, if it's a single indivisible injury, it's taking place over a long period of time. It's implicating multiple policies issued by multiple insurers such that we have to allocate insurance coverage over these things.
That issue really hasn't been briefed here, though, has it? The other insureds clause?
As a matter of fact, it has. Pages 21 to 28 in my brief deal exclusively with that issue, Justice O'Donnell. And what we pointed out was that when you get to this issue, if you're going to treat progressive injury cases as a single indivisible injury such that you're going to create joint and several liability for every policy that's been triggered so that the insured can pick one policy and have that policy respond all the way up to its limits, and then seek contribution from other insurers, that if it's a single indivisible injury as to trigger the all sums language, then it is a single indivisible injury as to trigger the other insurance language. And in this case, on page 25, we have the other insurance clauses listed in our brief, which say, and I'll summarize essentially, none of these insurers agreed to pay more than their pro rata share of a single indivisible injury. I should have been able to say, Penn General should have been able to say to Park Ohio, we appreciate your take on Goodyear. The other insurance clauses were addressed in Keene and in JH France and in Monsanto and in B&L Trucking, which are all the cases that this court relied upon on Goodyear. And they say when you have a single indivisible injury, the other insurance clauses apply, and this is how it works. We owe a pro rata. We could have maybe entered into a provisional settlement agreement or something with Park, Ohio, that would have allowed us to take an assignment, to make sure people were notified, other things. Instead, what we got was a response saying, no, Goodyear says we don't have to tell anybody anything except for you, and you're on the hook for the whole thing.
So your position, your answer to Justice O'Donnell really is at page 27 of your brief, where you talk about the clarification of Goodyear. And as I understand it, you're saying that the targeted insurance company would have the duty to defend based on its policy. And then the idea of the applicable policies, the notification obligation, would that still be part of the insured's obligation to identify the policies? And who would notify? Would that be the targeted defendant, or would it be the insured? Because I think part of the argument here about our policies are not applicable is because we never had notice. We never were told of the litigation. So who brings these other insurance companies in?
And we're kind of jumping around. And what it is it's a relationship. Obviously, it's communication between the insurer that's selected and the insured, because there has to be that request. If I have one insurance policy that's going to pay my full freight, why should I bother screwing around with asking for other ones? I've got one that does it. It's their problem. They contracted to give that to me. So that insurer has to say, respectfully, we only pay pro rata. This took place over a number of years. We think that there may be other insurance you need to help us out here.
And right now, Goodyear does not impose any obligation on the insured to do that.
As read, Goodyear does not have that. That's why we need to go back and we need to look at the other insurance clauses. And what's going to happen when you go there and you begin to look at the case law is you're going to find that the other insurance clauses only get us so far, because what Ms. Sullivan brought up is exactly accurate. What about if...
Counsel, that's where I want to stop before you jump on to the next point. And that's the part that I was suggesting could be fixed, and you're saying it's already there in the policy language, and that is if we say, and you're representing, who's actually paying your salary today to be here, which company?
Well, that would be Davis and Young. Penn General is paying the fees for it.
That won't affect
client,
our decision, no. Counsel. Yeah. You know that.
Well, it's a direct question.
You're representing an insurance company, right?
That's correct.
That's the way I understood it. Okay. Now, if your insurance company, who is targeted by the insured, can say under the policy provision that you point out to the insured, look, we have this provision for other insurance. We're putting you on notice. You've got to tell us. And if you don't, then you suffer the consequences of failing to do that. If that's all we changed in Goodyear, you still would have and I assume if there were periods where there was no insurance, then that doesn't help your company, right?
It wouldn't help the company. That's where we're going to
be. And that's what you want to do, and that's what I'm having trouble with. We've got a row full of lawyers all representing insurance companies, nobody representing the Goodyears of the world, who in the case of Goodyear was a company with a big environmental tail. So I understand that all the insurance companies would like to parse this out, but the insureds, in this case, Park, Ohio, isn't here, and Goodyear isn't here, and nobody representing their interests are here, and you want to take both sides, you all want us to take a big leap here and really change important fundamental rules as to contribution.
Well, I don't want to come before you and just tell you, here's your choices, pick which one or the other. That's the reason why
we just take the part that you've identified, other insurance, and say, okay, that, to the extent that folks don't understand, we didn't intend in Goodyear to eliminate the teeth of that provision in your policies.
You can go that route, Justice Pfeiffer. That's why I've argued that. However, as I was going to indicate, the reason why I think you're going to come to a point, and it's not this case, I'll tell you right now, it's the case that's going to have Goodrich or Goodyear or some other Typically, the companies that are involved in this, the insureds that I know you're very concerned about, are not Ma and Pa Kettle.
Right.
These are multi-million dollar multinational corporations that have made complex financial decisions to retain risk for their own financial benefit. And what they've done is come here and said, we're an insured. We're not being, these terrible insurance companies are doing this to us. And really what they've done is they've made these decisions, and then they're saying we shouldn't have to live with the consequences.
Well,
that would
be a different case. What you're saying
where
they decide to be self-insured.
It is
yeah.
a different case than this
All
one.
Right.
But when we go down the other insurance path, and I'm saying you have to go down that path in this case, you have to address that issue because that's left unresolved by Goodyear. But when you go down there, you're going to come to the point where you've got to now deal with the big dinosaurs out there, the big dogs that are out there, the litigation that's going on where you've got a $10 million SIR, and how am I going to deal with that? And does that $10 million SIR not get included in this? And so what Ms. Sullivan is arguing with respect to...
I don't know what an SIR is, but go ahead.
Self-insured retention.
Okay.
That's where we're getting to the point of, yes, we can go this way, and it may be a Band-Aid we can put over this situation, but the case is going to come before you where you're going to have to address this head on.
But if that does, then the Goodyear or the Goodrich or Ma and Pa... machine shop, they're at the table. They get to present their side, and nobody's here representing them at this point.
Other than Mr. Rose's very well-written Ohio Manufacturers Association amicus brief, where he did, in fact, bring it in. And so, yes, he is not here arguing, but I know that this court will carefully consider that. With your indulgence, Mr.
Garner, Chief, maybe I could ask you a question about...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
I'll get mine in.
Go ahead, Chief.
No, go ahead.
The question that is, I think, in this case arises when, or does it arise, when the issue is that one of the other insured, one of the other carriers claims prejudice as a result of the settlement by the first carrier. Where do we meet that issue?
Let's address that issue right now, because what I want to do is let's assume there's a breach of the policies for CNA and Nationwide, and let's assume that we now have to apply Ferrando, which goes back to, I think, is going to answer your question and go to Justice Cupp's
right.
earlier question as well, too. It's a two-step process, according to Ferrando. Number one, was there a breach? I'm going to say right now, yes, there was a breach. If you don't get notice until after the case is settled, there's a breach. What does that do? That creates a presumption of prejudice. All right, fine. That only gets us so far, though. They're relieved of their obligation to provide insurance only if, in fact, they have prejudice in this case. And in this case, we provided uncontested, unrebutted evidence that rebutted the presumption of prejudice by offering the Rome Report. That's Joint Exhibit 13. It's at the supplement at pages 107 to 111. It established the following facts. Number one, Park Ohio was being well defended by experienced, qualified defense counsel. Number two, Park Ohio was the only viable defendant in this case. Number three, Park Ohio did not have any viable medical or causation defenses. Number four, that the likely value of Mr. DiStefano's claim was in the $5 million to $6 million range. Number five, that the settlement was the best option for the case. Number six, that the $1 million settlement, which is 20% of likely value, was in line with other similar cases in the venue. Based upon that, our coverage counsel opined, and we followed the advice, that Penn General did not suffer any actual prejudice in this case because we couldn't have done any better than what Park Ohio did. What CNA and Nationwide are arguing is never, ever do prejudice analysis in settlement cases. If there was a settlement, we were prejudiced. In their scenario, had Park Ohio expended $1 in defense costs and settled the case for $1, but they didn't find out about it till later, they're still out because they didn't get notice before the settlement. It makes no difference what the substantive quality of the settlement is, and that's not what Ferrando says. Ferrando says you must engage in a prejudice analysis, and with all due respect, the facts in this case are unrebutted. There is no evidence in the record which rebuts the Rome Report. The closest they come is the deposition of Linda Graft, taken in December 13, 2006. She's a CNA representative. She testifies 2 years after CNA has put on notice that she still hasn't found the CNA policies. She couldn't say when CNA should have been notified. She said, well, notice wasn't late until Pennsylvania General entered the settlement agreement with Park, Ohio, which was November of 2005, more than a year after CNA was put on notice. She couldn't identify any witnesses that were unavailable or deceased. She couldn't identify any witnesses whose memories had faded. And she acknowledged that CNA hadn't bothered to interview any of the witnesses in this case. She couldn't identify any documents that had been destroyed and could not say what Penn General would have done differently or should have done differently if CNA was in its place. By the way, that's Joint Exhibit 44. It is not in the supplement, but it is in the record.
You're not suggesting any modification, then, of Ferrando in the adoption of the modification to Goodyear?
I'm standing here relying upon Ferrando, Justice O'Donnell. I believe that under the facts of this case, and by the way, this Court's review is de novo. This was a stipulated record. It was a declaratory judgment action as well as a contribution action. On those kinds of facts, that kind of procedure, it's de novo. We don't give any deference to the trial court. The trial court's decision that there was prejudice in this case was unfounded and unsupported by the evidence, and the 8th District had every reason to ignore it, as does this court. So I stand on Ferrando, Justice O'Donnell, and I believe that unless this court wants to change Goodyear and Ferrando, my client's entitled to have contribution in this
case. Let's go just to Goodyear. I suffer the burden of wanting to take threshold questions, and I want to go back to the application of Gladys, because, as you know, from reading Goodyear, you know that I think it was wrong when it was decided, so that branch of Gladys is easy for me. Is the fact that all counsel here agree that we should overrule Goodyear, does that support the changed circumstances element of the Gladys test?
I don't think so, and I wouldn't want to advance a rule that would say that, because there's going to be a time when there's two policyholders standing here, Justice Pfeiffer, or someone else is going to say, well, we think this law ought to change.
But you both, in all the arguments, you've certainly elucidated for us, I think, the problem with Goodyear, the application of Goodyear.
Yes, and I believe that there are justices on this court, opinions that I have read, that have looked at Gladys and asked the question. I know you're looking at it in the context of the employer intentional tort statute cases. The decision hasn't come out yet. I know you're looking at it. You've looked at it in other contexts. And there's a question as to how rigidly Gladys gets applied, because Gladys itself can become an impediment to good law if we apply it too rigidly. And I understand exactly why it was brought in there. We don't want to have the court flip-flopping because of political...
As you know from our case law, we haven't applied it very often, very infrequently, right. In fact. This seems like a very suspect case for application.
I'm personally fond of it, mainly because I was involved in it. But
although counsel, as you noted, Mr. Rose did file a brief here, and he went through the steps and takes a diametrically opposed view than the parties in front of us now. So, I mean, we do have the other argument that Goodyear is still viable and should be followed. If we follow Goodyear, of course, you are in the winning position.
I think whether you follow Goodyear or whether you change Goodyear, I'm in the winning mm-hmm. position. And I would just like to conclude with this. We've looked at sort of the contract issues, and I've said with respect to the contract issues, Park, Ohio, under Goodyear, didn't have any obligation to provide notice to CNA or Nationwide. And then even if there was a breach, there wasn't any prejudice as to alleviate their obligation to provide coverage. We have to look at the equitable side of it as well, the contribution side of it, because this is I'm a contribution plaintiff standing here suing two other insurance companies, and we say everybody agrees I should be entitled to contribution if the policies are applicable. When we went through the breach of contract part of it, we've established that the policies are applicable because there was no prejudice, and so we ask, are there any equitable defenses which should bar my client's claim? And the answer is no. There's basically two, I held up three fingers, there's basically two reasons why they've argued that we're not entitled to our equitable contribution. First is a delay of some kind, and in the equity arena we call that latches. There's a defense that exists. We don't have to invent new law for that. And latches doesn't apply here, and I'll explain why. The second is sort of a combination, a hodgepodge of arguments that we were a volunteer, we sat on our rights, or that we were waiving our rights, and neither of these is valid. When we look at the latches defense, we have four elements that they would have to meet. And the first being delay in asserting the right. Absence of excuse is the second. Knowledge of injury is the third. And then prejudice, there's that prejudice again, is the fourth. We don't have a delay in asserting the right. The reason why is because we put them on notice of our claims in September 2004. Our contribution claim didn't even accrue until November 2005 when we paid the settlement in full. We tried to bring all these folks together, but it was opposed, and we couldn't get the litigations brought together despite our attempts to consolidate the actions. We had a valid excuse, and there was no knowledge of the injury until such time as we were provided the other insurance information in August of 2004, because it wasn't until then that we knew these were the insurers from which we could seek contribution. And so we don't have absence of excuse, and we didn't have knowledge of injury until that time, and then we've already addressed the prejudice aspect of that in respect to the unrebutted Rome report, which is in the record, and again, no evidence to the contrary.
You need to sum up, Mr. Gardner.
Pennsylvania General was not a volunteer, didn't sit on its rights or waive its rights, as Justice Stratton, you indicated. This is exactly what we were told to do under Goodyear, and although we didn't do it right away, we did do it and have sought to use the remedies available to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gardner. Ms. Sullivan, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Mr. Chief Justice, just three quick points. Justice Lanzinger, Mr. Garner said to you whether you overrule Goodyear or not, he wins. With respect, whether you overrule Goodyear or not, he loses. Because the narrow rule that Goodyear allows contribution only where a policy is applicable means our policies aren't applicable. And I would ask you to look no farther than Goodyear itself. If you go back to Goodyear, we focused on the allocation ruling, which is the first one, but your second ruling in Goodyear sent the case back to the trial court saying you have to find out if the notice provisions were complied with in order to decide if these policies were applicable. So Goodyear's second holding itself says applicability depends on notice. We didn't have notice. Our policies aren't applicable. He loses for that reason. Justice Pfeiffer, the reason why you're not seeing Goodrich or Goodyear or Park, Ohio here is not really the fault of the parties here. It's a consequence of Goodyear, because Goodyear created a bifurcated proceeding where first the insured party goes against the targeted insurer, and then you have a separate contribution action. So we submit it's unlikely that you're going to have everybody there. We weren't there in the first round. The insured isn't here in the second round. You shouldn't wait until you have everybody here in front of you to overrule Goodyear. It's a consequence of Goodyear that we're not all here, and I agree with Mr. Garner that the views of Goodyear and the insured parties are ably represented in Mr. Rose's Ohio Manufacturers Association brief. Last point, Your Honors, Justice Cupp, you focused on Ferrando and prejudice, and Mr. Garner's obviously a very able trial advocate, tried to relitigate his facts to you here. But this is not the place to relitigate the facts. The trial court found prejudice. The trial court followed Ferrando. It presumed prejudice, and it found that all the things that Mr. Garner said here were not enough to overcome that presumption. It cited Ormat, in which this court said the gravest prejudice is when a case has been settled out from under you without any notice or opportunity to participate. That is this case. Ormat is very similar to this case. So with respect, this court shouldn't be asked as a kind of second guesser of fact to overturn the finding of the trial court. It should be respected on an abuse of discretion standard. The Eighth District disagreed with the trial court because it said as a matter of law, Goodyear obviates prejudice.
The Eighth District said whether it's an abuse of discretion or a matter of law, we find they were wrong either way.
That's correct, Your Honor, but we think that if you look at the Eighth District, it said it was an abuse of discretion because Goodyear obviates a prejudice finding, and we think that's incorrect. We think Goodyear says that applicability depends on notice. Mr. Garner played a little fast and loose with the term a minute ago of applicable. He said the policies were triggered. We concede they're triggered. But a policy isn't applicable unless it's been complied with. And so if you don't go all the way to overruling Goodyear, we respectfully request that you clarify that Goodyear does not allow a contribution action against policies whose terms have been ignored. To do so would be to put in place a rule that is itself an unconstitutional abrogation of contracts.
That's 30 seconds.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Sullivan. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.